So is it anti-Semitic to criticize Israel at all?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, biblical scholar and cultural commentator, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice for moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Call 866-34-TRUTH to get on The Line of Fire. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire as we start our week together. Michael Brown, blessed and delighted to be here with you and here to infuse you with faith and truth and courage to help you stand strong on the front lines. All of us today, living in America, around the world, followers of Jesus, we are in the line of fire. So we're here to equip you so you can stand strong. We are working on our May Frontline newsletter now. We've got testimonies put together already, thinking through the message, the main message, the Hebrew word study. We'll have other features. So sign up today if you're not getting our Frontline newsletter. If you want to find out more about my own background, testimony from LSD to PhD, the three R's of our ministry, revival in the church, gospel-based moral and cultural revolution in society, the redemption of Israel, by all means, you want to sign up. We'll get you on our welcome tour and get you our monthly Frontline digital newsletter, all free. Go to thelineoffire.org, thelineoffire.org, and just click on subscribe, and we'll get it coming your way. All right, here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. You can respond to anything that I'm talking about today having to do with Israel. We can talk about the state of America, upcoming elections, where things stand regarding Israel as well, or general questions. We may take some of those, or things you want to challenge me at. Tell me why I'm so wrong. Phone lines are wide open. We're not going to restrict topics. It's just going to be a matter of time of what we get to. 866-348-7884. Is it anti-Semitic to criticize Israel at all? Of course not. Absolutely not. In fact, some of Israel's staunchest critics are Jews. Some of Israel's staunchest critics are Israelis living in Israel. It is not anti-Semitic to criticize Israel, to differ with Israel, to think that Israel does certain things wrong. That's not anti-Semitic to do that. It's not anti-Semitic to differ with individual things Jewish people do or some things that some Jewish people do. There's nothing anti-Semitic about that. Natan Sharansky, who is the Soviet Jewish dissident, imprisoned for his dissidence and then ultimately made his way to Israel where he became a political leader, he gave a threefold definition of when it is anti-Semitic to criticize Israel. And I agree with his threefold definition. It's convenient to use. It is anti-Semitic to demonize the nation of Israel. In other words, to paint a picture of the nation of Israel as if it is this ugly, demonic, horrific entity. You say, well, I believe it is. Well, you're free to believe that. I'm saying it is anti-Semitic to believe that, but you're free to believe that, right? Just like if you said all whites are rapists or all blacks are murderers. Well, those would be racist comments. You can believe them if you want, but those would be racist comments. So when you demonize the nation as a whole, that's anti-Semitic. When you delegitimize Israel and say that Israel has no right to exist, then that is anti-Semitic. And when you use double standards, that you hold Israel to standards different than any other nation on the planet, and therefore single them out for criticism in certain ways, that is anti-Semitic. But to say, for example, I don't like Netanyahu. I think he's doing a terrible job as prime minister. That's not anti-Semitic. If you say, I think this right-wing government is downright dangerous, and you got some racists among them, you do. That's not anti-Semitic. If you say, I don't agree with Israel's policy in the West Bank, and I think they should pull out of their settlements, that's not anti-Semitic to say that. Israel has a right to defend itself, but they've gone way too far in the war to Gaza, and they're causing way too many civilian casualties. Nothing anti-Semitic about that. Nothing whatsoever. You can hold to those views, and many within Israel hold to those views as well. You can say, you know, Jewish people I went to school with, they were like uppity. Okay, as long as you don't think all Jews are uppity. Well, you know, I don't know. The Jews I work with in business, they're like really cutthroat and really tough with money. Okay, that's the ones you work with. Just don't make a generalization on Jews in general. That's when things become anti-Semitic, when you make a generalization about the people as a whole. The same with any other group, all right? The same with any other group. You can have an issue with Americans without being anti-American. But if you demonize the nation as a whole, if you delegitimize our right to exist, if you paint broad caricatured strokes about all Americans, then that becomes anti-American. It becomes biased in its attitude and speech. It's the same with Israel. So it always, I can't say it boggles my mind after all these decades, but it's still jarring to see how I can take issue with Israel on various points. I can say how there's no salvation for the Jewish people outside of Jesus Yeshua. And yet people say, well, you're just siding, you're just, all you do is side with your people or side with my race, as if being Jewish was just a race, interestingly. So it's always, oh, so we can't criticize Israel? No one's saying you can't criticize it. You can do whatever you want to do. But the question is, when does it become anti-Semitic? So I'm explaining when it becomes anti-Semitic. So again, you may hold to those views, but I just say then you hold to anti-Semitic views. Now, today is Holocaust Remembrance Day, and it's extraordinary that at this time in Israel, when this especially remembered, the sirens sound, people just stop, you know, traffic stops, people get out of the cars just for a couple of minutes, this constant remembrance that Israel, even as of the last 24 hours, 48 hours, has been bombed from the north and from the south. Hamas bombing again. Yeah, in the midst of everything going on, bombing again. And Israel, of course, now carrying out retaliatory strikes in Rafah and doing its best to move forward. America has said we do not support the current initiative in Rafah as it stands. We don't support the current offensive. There's too much danger to civilians. Israel said, all right, here's a map. Go to Mawasi, go to this region here, because we're coming in for Hamas. This is the last Hamas stronghold, and we're coming in. And we have to do it, so evacuate. UN saying it's not humanitarian to have them evacuate again. We've got a million people holed up there. All kinds of complex, difficult issues, for sure, that are being worked out. But in the midst of this, Holocaust Remembrance Day, Israel in an existential battle for its own survival, with hostile forces surrounding it, and with Iran the fighting the battle through its proxies, Hamas and Hezbollah, to try to wipe out Israel. An extraordinary time, an extraordinary season. In the midst of this now, Hamas has said that they accept the new Qatari proposal, ceasefire proposal. Israel has said they're examining it because this is different than what they agreed to. And there's only one reason Hamas is doing this. Just like they agreed to free hostages in the first place, it's because Israel devastatingly took out their strongholds in the northern part of Gaza very, very quickly. And the devastation was so quick, so overwhelming, they really had no choice but to say, okay, we're going to negotiate. As much as they talk about martyrdom and all this, when it's still now fighting for their lives and survival at the end, they're holed up in tunnels and using hostages, as we understand, as human shields. So obviously they're fearing Israel coming in and exerting pressure and seeking to take out their lost strongholds in Rafah. I was interacting with a brother a few months ago. I wouldn't call him anti-Zionist, but he's so strongly pro-Palestinian. He has extreme suspicion towards Israel and what they do and believes the worst narratives. I mean, we really clashed in our views. But he was saying, look, what about the teaching of Jesus, turn the other cheek? What about the teaching of Jesus that you bless those who curse you, etc.? Well, that's an interpersonal relationship. That is not talking about if some rapist and serial killer breaks into your home, that you say, oh, my wife's down the hallway there, the kids are down there, and God bless you as you go. No, that's not saying. You call the police instantly, and if you can subdue that person, you subdue that person. And if the only way to save your family was to take that person out, that would be a righteous thing to do. The same way when we are invaded, if we were being invaded by foreign armies and we were having tens of thousands of our people slaughtered to just with numbers come up to what it would be, the equivalent of multiple 9/11s, one day after another, after another, after another, or multiple the same day to compute with what Israel suffered on October 7th, we'd be in all-out war with these enemies and doing everything we knew to take them out. The way to overcome Hitler was not to turn the other cheek. So we're talking about war being enacted here. It must be, Hamas must be taken out of power. The question is, what then replaces them? Something worse than Hamas? As you chop the head of the snake and now you get 10 snakes instead? Is there a way to reach out to the people and say, look, you can have a peaceful life. You can have a prosperous life. You can raise your kids without fear if you'll just acknowledge that Israel is here to stay. Because remember, Hamas says we will do October 7th over and over again until there is no more Israel. Hamas has said this is not a conflict of 70-something years. This is a conflict going back well before that, well before a century, meaning that Israel, the Jewish people, should not be there in the land at all. There is no two-state solution with Hamas. There is no two-state proposal. There is no dwelling side by side with Israel in the land, even with 1967 borders. There is none of that, or pre-1967 borders. There is none of that with Hamas. It is the annihilation of Israel, the extermination of Israel, the end of Israel, period. That's all that Hamas stands for. They are Islamists, all right? They are not primarily nationalists. They are primarily Islamists. That is their viewpoint. Is there a way to appeal to the people, to appeal to the mothers and to the children that remain, to appeal to the fathers that are still alive and to say, we're here, we're not going anywhere. There is not going to be some massive return of millions and millions of ex-Palestinians that are around the world. That's not going to happen. So accept the reality here and dwell side by side in peace and prosperity. That's the dream scenario, right? We'll help your economy. We'll help your school systems. We'll help your infrastructure. We'll help with technology. You know, Israel's saying this. Just live in peace side by side with us. It can happen. Now, of course, there are extremists within Israel that don't want that to happen and say, no, we just have to repopulate Gaza and take it over again. And the same thing with take over Judea Samaria completely and no Palestinians there, no Arabs there, etc. There are some extremists that say it, but the vast majority of the people would be happy to live side by side. They've lost hope of it now after the massacre. They've lost hope. But this is where we stand today, friends. To take issue with how Israel conducts itself, to take issue with Israeli policy, on and on and on. That's not anti-Semitic. But if you demonize the nation as a whole, if you delegitimize Israel's right to exist and use double standards against Israel and hold those standards against them, contrary to the way you treat the rest of the world, that's anti-Semitic. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. Got a bunch more to cover today.
This is Michael Ellison, founder of Trivita Wellness. Have you ever noticed that you're not as strong as you would like to be? Is your muscle strength and even balance not like it was just a few years ago? I want to introduce to you Mile Health, an amazing product packed with 9 essential amino acids that has been clinically proven to build strong, lean muscles at any age. This formula has 25 human studies and over $20 million in scientific research. It has been used by the U.S. Olympic swim team, the NASA astronaut program, the U.S. military, and yes, by thousands of people just like you. It has made such an incredible difference in my life that just recently, in my annual physical, my physician said, "You have unusual strength and balance for a man of your age." Thank you, Mile Health. Here is our special offer for you as a Line of Fire listener.
Feel stronger, have better balance, and improved quality of life. Try MyoHealth for yourself. Order today and use promo code BROWN25 to receive 25% off your order. As a new customer, 100% of your order proceeds from your first order will go to support the Line of Fire radio broadcast. Call 1-800-771-5584 or online at trivita.com.
With the MyoHealth, my strength has gone up. I was doing weight that I haven't done since my 20s. And I usually ride my bike to the gym, and then on the way back, after I've done my weight training, I'm huffing and puffing. And on Sunday, I rode my bike there and back, and I had so much energy. I'm telling you, with the MyoHealth, amazing. I can't believe it.
Try MyoHealth for yourself. Call 1-800-771-5584. 1-800-771-5584 or online at TRIVITA, trivita.com.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on the Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, shout out to our co-sponsors, Trivita. Check out the products. See if they work for you. The money back guarantee. But hey, here's the deal. Worst case scenario, you made a donation to get us on more stations, expanding the Line of Fire. But best case, you find that these wellness products really work for you, as they do for me. I use them every day. So great supplements. 800-771-5584 to find out more. Okay. To get on the air with me, that's 866-34-TRUTH. Tell you what, I'm going to go to some calls and talk about what's happening in Israel. And we've got some other calls under the subjects. We'll get you as well. But a little bit later in the broadcast, I'm going to play a clip for you from one of the lead protesters at Columbia University. And to contrast the spirit of real revolutionaries with the spirit of the pampered protesters. As I said last week, I don't believe for a split second that suddenly, all over America, students have a bleeding heart for the Palestinian people. And they really care about the suffering of the Palestinians. Now, some do, but the vast majority, that's not the issue at all. It's just the latest rage against them machine, you know, give it, you know, push back against the man. And I'm watching one video, and a lady looked white to me. She's telling someone else, we don't like you because you're white. We don't like white people. That's what we're protesting about. We don't like white people. This is just the latest variation of stand up, protest, down with the colonizers, down with the oppressors, and that's the Zionists and the whites and on and on. Just the latest manifestation. Just rebel against the system. We'll get into that a bit more. All right, let me grab a couple of Israel-related calls. We'll start in Fort Worth, Texas. Joseph, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Yeah, so I have a question. So I lived in the Middle East for a couple of years, been able to do some missions over there. My wife, she comes from Palestinian background. And so Arabs are really dear to my heart, and I really got to see the Arab community, even the Christian community that's there, and understand what it's like. My concern is that the evangelical movement today overlooks the suffering of the Palestinian people and solely focuses on just praying for Israel, praying for its success, which is good. We need to be praying for Israel, but I also believe that many Christians are overlooking the plight of the Palestinian people, including Christian brothers and sisters there. And so I guess, you know, I hear on your program that you don't like to use unequal weights and balances. And I do kind of see that with how we're addressing the Palestinian people, because, yes, Hamas needs to be taken out. But at the same time, we're the way that Israel is conducting its war, they need to be using a surgical tool in order to extract them off, and instead they're using a sledgehammer. And so for me, I just wanted to get your opinion about this. Is I think the way they're conducting the war is they're actually doing more harm than good in the long run, because they can actually be promoting more terrorism with what they're doing.
I agree with much of what you're saying. Number one, especially with the older generation. The younger generation of believers, of evangelicals, is really much more confused when it comes to Israel and doesn't understand God's purposes for Israel the same way as the older generation. But with the older generation, you're 100% right. We often forget about the suffering of the Palestinian people. We forget about the Christians among them. We forget to pray for their salvation. I was actually part of a meeting Saturday night in Vermont, and a local pastor was asked to come up and pray for Israel at the end. And he did, but didn't say a word about Palestinians. When he finished, I said, let's pray for the Palestinians. They're precious in God's sight as well. And I've said, like a broken record on the show, that Palestinian blood is just as precious in God's sight as Israeli blood. The very first day of the massacre, in fact, I was speaking the next day, October 8th, in Fort Worth, and brought a message on God's plan for Israel. But I said, listen, the nature of the war, the nature of how Hamas has entrenched itself in the midst of civilian communities, there are going to be more Palestinians who die than Israelis. We need to be praying for the Palestinians. And even wrote an article early on called Sympathy for the Palestinians. So I do agree with you there that we often overlook that, or we demonize that people as a whole, as if they're all Hamas. I know many are Hamas supporters, and they have rejoiced with Hamas's victories. I look at them as victims of brainwashing and indoctrination and the situation in which they've been raised. But certainly, we often overlook prayer for them or concern for them, or think that their blood is not as precious as Israeli blood. So I agree with you on that point 100%. As far as my emphasis, I have stated those things over and over and over and over. Anyone that's watched the broadcast or listened over the months will know that. At the same time, I'm constantly confronting issues having to do with Jew hatred, with the demonization of Israel as a whole, the campus protests now, the rising tide of anti-Semitism. So I'm going to talk about those things more. But when we talk about the actual war on the ground, always going to mention the other side of things. The last point, I would say that it's a bit of an overstatement to say that Israel needs surgical precision and they're using a sledgehammer. They're doing their best to use surgical precision in the and take out Hamas, but Hamas has set itself up by design to take that. The only way you can get to Hamas is by killing civilians. It's just that's the only possible way you can do it. They've set it up in that way, and they welcome it. They're on record saying, we'll lose hundreds of thousands of lives. It's a victory for us. So could Israel do even better? Yes. Would I make as blunt a distinction as you? No. Now, is there a problem ultimately that what Israel does is going to lead to more problems? Yes, absolutely. It's a very, very difficult situation here. That's why I put out my dream scenario. So I agree with almost everything you said, but I believe the sledgehammer versus surgical precision is an overstatement in light of the reality of the war there and the degree to which the people are willingly working with Hamas, standing with Hamas. We even know October 7th, there's civilians that joined in the massacre, the civilians that were housing hostages. And as you see the crowds, I mean, I saw the footage myself, shown that the IDF has put together the 47 minutes of footage. I saw the celebration as bodies were brought in and paraded through the streets, and the crowds were celebrating and taking pictures on their cell phones. So it's a tragic, difficult situation. But I agree with almost everything you said, everything you said, the way you said it, except one point I would nuance a little. All right?
Okay. Yeah, sounds good. Thank you, Mark. Touch around.
Thank you so much for the call and for raising these issues. It's very important. And I just wanna second what Joseph had said. Don't forget about the suffering of Palestinian people right now. Yes, Israel is under siege. Yes. Living in Israel is incredibly intense with the world coming against you. Yes, Jew hatred is rising around the world. We need to call it out, confront it. At the same time, don't forget about the Palestinians suffering greatly in horrific conditions. There is shortage of food supplies, water supplies, things that Israel sends in as well. Hamas tries to take for themselves. That's another issue and problem. Disease, real problems. And then, of course, all those who've been killed, thousands who've died. We don't know the exact numbers because Hamas has given the numbers, and they don't even tell you which were their own combatants and which were civilians. And numbers are only inflated by Hamas. In any case, there's doubtless great suffering, and there are Christians among them as well. The Christians' greatest enemy, though, is not Israel, it's Hamas. Let that not be forgotten in the Middle East, and may God intervene in his mercy. 866-348-7884. A whole lot more to go on the broadcast today. Thanks for standing with us. Thanks for helping us push back against the darkness. Together, we are making a difference. Hey friends, Michael Brown here. My delight to serve as your voice for moral sanity and spiritual clarity. We are living in such urgent times today, friends, that all of us are in the line of fire. There's a target on your back. There's a target on my back. If you simply seek to live by biblical values or just conservative moral values, you could be canceled. You could be cast out. You could be put down. You could be silenced. I'm here to say, friends, that I am not about to be silenced, and I don't believe you are either. It is time for us to stand up. It is time for us to say enough is enough. It is time for us to push back in Jesus' name, not fighting the way the world fights. No, overcoming evil with good, overcoming hatred with love, overcoming the flesh with the power of the Spirit, overcoming lies with truth. And that's what we're here to do on the Line of Fire broadcast. And friends, it's not just a broadcast. It is a movement of people around the world, God's people standing up, saying enough is enough and saying, Lord, here we are. Send us, use us. I want to urge you today to join our support team because we are on the front lines together. And we are literally touching people around the world, in America, in the nations, in Israel. And together with your help, we're going to amplify this voice and spread this movement around the globe. So I encourage you, go right now to thelineoffire.org, thelineoffire.org. Click donate monthly support, thelineoffire.org. Click donate monthly support. When you do, you become a torchbearer. We immediately send you two great life-changing books. We immediately give you access to many classes I've taught. Others have to pay to take those. You get them for free. Exclusive video audio content, a new audio message every month, an insider prayer newsletter, 15% discount on our online bookstore, so much more. Join our support team today. Go to thelineoffire.org. Donate monthly support.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on the broadcast. All right, I want to go to a clip, then we'll go back to your calls. 866-34-TRUTH. Got a couple of phone lines open if you want to get in the queue here. So this is Johanna King Slutsky. She's a PhD candidate at Columbia University. She was one of the protest leaders with the encampment there. And they're asking for supplies to be brought in. I want you to hear this dialogue. It's really quite telling.
Why should the university be obligated to provide food to people who have taken over a building?
First of all, we're saying that they're obligated to provide food to students who pay for a meal plan here.
But you mentioned that there was a request that food and water be brought in.
To allow it to be brought in. I mean, well, I guess it's ultimately a question of what kind of community and obligation Columbia feels it has to its students. Do you want students to die of dehydration and starvation or get severely ill, even if they disagree with you? If the answer is no, then you should allow basic, I mean, it's crazy to say because we're on an Ivy League campus, but this is like basic humanitarian aid we're asking for. Like, could people please have a glass of water?
But they water did problems? Put themselves in that very deliberately in that situation and in that position. So it seems like you're sort of saying, we want to be revolutionaries, we want to take up this building, now would you please bring us food and water?
Nobody's asking them to bring anything. We're asking them to not violently stop us from bringing in basic humanitarian aid.
They're stopping the delivery of food?
We are looking for a commitment from them that they will not stop it violently.
But they haven't stopped it yet.
I don't know to what extent it has been attempted, but we're looking for a commitment.
May God bring this young woman to a saving knowledge of her son and give her a purpose in life beyond this pseudo-revolutionary nonsense. By the way, her doctoral thesis, quote, I'm particularly interested in theories of the imagination and poetry as interpreted through a Marxian. Oh, Karl Marx, what do you know? A Marxian lens in order to update and propose an alternative to historicist ideological critiques of the romantic imagination. It's clear, right? She said, prior to joining Columbia, I worked as a political strategist. This is her bio at Columbia University. For leftist and progressive causes and remained active in the higher education labor movement. No, is this just the latest revolutionary Marxist cause? What's so extraordinarily ironic is, okay, you have the people in Gaza are really suffering potential dehydration, starvation, severe illness because of the conditions in which they're living. And here you've got these pampered protesters saying, hey, we want food, water supplies. Like, oh, hang on. The campus dining hall is open. You've got a meal plan? The campus dining hall is open. Well, we've taken over a building. Well, send some of the people out to get food, bring it in. Hey, tell you what, or go online and order. Get yourself an out and order food. Well, we want to make sure it's not violently stopped. Nobody stopped anything. Nobody stopped anything. Picture this. You got a delivery. Whatever a service use, Grubhub or whoever it is, right? And you say, I'd like guarantee that no one is going to try to violently stop the delivery. It's like, who's stopping any deliveries? Where is anything stopped? You're the ones threatening violence, right? What's happening here? So this whole mythical thing that we're besieged. Hey, tell you what, just go out and just walk outside and go ahead and get what you want and go back in. Or call a friend, say, hey, could you bring me a bottle of water? Or maybe next time before you take a building, bring a few extra bottles of water with you. This is remarkable. Okay, let's see. Over at UCLA, protesters said, we will not leave. We'll remain here until our demands are met. But they had some urgent needs, though. Hot food for lunch. we are revolutionaries. Yeah, I've been writing about revolutionaries and revolutionary themes for many years now. And the basic mentality of a revolutionary is life as it is not worth living, but the cause is worth dying for, right? That's how a revolutionary often thinks. So Bill Bright, in his book Revolution Now, quotes the words of Nietzsche, a Marxist who died in prison for his role in the assassination of Tsar Alexander II. The second quote, so this is a Marxist revolutionary, said, the revolutionary man is a consecrated man. He has neither his own interests nor concerns nor feelings nor attachment nor property, not even a name. All for him is absorbed in the single exclusive interest, in the one thought, in the one passion, revolution. Che Guevara invited his old friend, Julio El Gaucho Castro, to join him in Cuba. And he said, this experience of ours is really worth taking a couple of bullets for. If you do come, don't think of returning. The revolution won't wait. Well, these protesters don't seem to be willing to forget about taking a bullet. How about a cold lunch? No, it's got hot food for lunch. I'm looking at the demands. Important, all caps. I mean, how could they protest effectively without a nice hot lunch? And also on their list, vegan food, gluten-free food? And then quite emphatically, no packaged food, no coffee, no bagels, no bananas, no nuts. On with the revolution. And they had urgent needs, all capitals, urgent. Headlamps, air surf goggles, skater helmets, wood for barrier. And we have to construct a barrier. We need priests bring us the wood for our revolutionary barrier. Rain ponchos, umbrellas, and super bright flashlights with strobe charged. Yeah, the flashlights, make sure they're super bright and make sure they're charged. What kind of revolutionaries will we be without super bright strobe flashlights fully charged? Over at the University of Chicago, the protesters made a series of supply requests for its medical tent, including Plan B, also known as the morning after pill. Just in case the revolutionaries get to doing some other extracurricular activity, make sure you have the Plan B pill, HIV tests, and dental dams. If you don't know what dental dams are, that's just fine. Those who do, yeah. This is on with the revolution. What kind of nonsense is this? This is what a pampered privilege protest looks like. It's not based on principle. That's what it looks like. All right, back to the phones. Let's go to Dayton, Ohio. Carl, you are on the line of fire.
And your name is your Dr. Brown, right?
That's last time I checked. Yes, sir.
I don't have much to say. I'm just sick of these ignorant people. They don't really know what's going on. These are just descendants of Philistines and Edomites, and that's all they are. And I'm a black guy who was grafted into, into the kingdom. And I just see these ignorant people. They, like in Dayton, I was out one time, and it was a Wednesday. This is when it's just getting started. And I see all these people marching, and I was playing dumb and ignorant. I'm like, so what's going on here? And I was talking to a guy, handsome guy. He was Arab or something. He was telling me what's going on, which it didn't make any sense. But I see these people walking in line like a zombie, and they don't know if they would allow these people to take over this country. These women who are marching in line, right? Probably medical students, going to be lawyers, whatever. They wouldn't be going to school. They'd be wearing burqas up to their eyeballs. You know, they would get no respect. And they're marching for these people.
It's like Queers for Palestine, right?
I'm sorry?
It's like the Queers for Palestine movement. It's like you can do that. You can do that in Israel. You can have a gay pride march in Israel, sad to say, but go ahead, have your gay pride march in the West Bank or worse still, in Gaza, and see what happens to you. See what happens to your trans feminism. Yeah, see what happens to you. Exactly, exactly.
They're actually marching for people that hate them.
Yeah.
And it's just a paradox to me. And I just really don't. But I guess it's just ignorance, you know. And
here's what it is, Carl. There are a few things. There are people. Look, there are Jews against the war in Gaza right now because they feel Israel is going too far. And it's bringing great suffering on Palestinian people. So there are those who are genuinely compassionate. And you're going to have Muslims who historically have issues with Israel and are more pro-Palestinian. So they're going to have some knowledge. But your average protester, first when people say, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. You say, excuse me, which river and which sea? They can't answer that. Then you show them a map and show them, okay, the Jordan River in the Mediterranean Sea, and say, well, what nation is there right now? Oh, that's called Israel. So in other words, you're saying no more Israel. Oh, we didn't realize we were saying that. You know, that's another thing. And where do the Jewish people go? What's the Hamas solution? Exterminate them. Exterminate them or expel them. That's the Hamas solution. And you are standing with Hamas. There are two things. One, sir, is the irrational nature of anti-Semitism, that it just people can they get angry at the Jews, conspire against the Jews, evil Israel, evil Jews. And the other thing is, like I said, it's part of the latest protest thing. Look, I do not believe that around the world suddenly in 2020 there was tremendous sympathy for Black Americans. I do not believe that. I do not believe that suddenly all around the world, Everybody cared. All Europe, everybody cared about police brutality against African Americans. I don't believe that for a split second. It was just another anti-American, anti-oppressor thing. I don't believe it was true solidarity or true compassion or true anything in that regard. So this is the latest manifestation of that. And it is irrational. And then a lot of the younger generation, TikTok, they're educated in such a way that Hamas, they're the great freedom fighters. You know, Osama bin Laden's manifesto against America or against the West, that went viral on TikTok recently. People are like, yes, he's got it right. It's like, you realize who that is? You realize who that is? You realize that that man wants you dead? That you're part of the problem in his eyes? So tremendous ignorance, tremendous demonic deception. And that's the scary thing, to see this many people drink the Kool-Aid. To think, you know, Columbia's just said they're setting down their commencement ceremonies. This is a big thing, graduation, shut down because of these protesters. Other schools doing the same, going to complete remote classes now. Yeah, thank you, sir, for the call. I appreciate it. Hey, guys, let's grab some of those slides. When I debunk the myths that today's Jews are actually descended of the Khazars, this myth, Ashkenazi Jews, white Jews, yeah, just among many comments we get, Zionism is Satan's army on earth. We have those slides, guys? Yeah, there's one of them. Zionism is Satan's army on earth. And then as I talk about how our universities are cultivating anti-Semitism, one of the replies, he's just on YouTube, the U.S. is finally waking up to the fact that it is Zionist occupied. Those evil Zionist Jews trying to take over the world. Oh, yeah, that's the rhetoric out there. We'll be right back. George, I'm going to get to your call shortly.
Have you had a setback from an injury, accident, or surgery that left you feeling weaker and a loss of strength? Or are you feeling the effects of aging and just don't feel like you have the stamina or energy you used to? Then MyoHealth might be an answer to your prayers. Backed by 24 human clinical studies and over $20 million in government-funded research, MyoHealth contains a perfect balance of all 9 essential amino acids. With MyoHealth, you can rebuild your strength, improve your balance and mobility, have more energy while restoring your health and vitality, and start building new, lean, stronger muscle in as little as 30 days. By combining MyoHealth with a healthy diet and regular exercise, you can feel stronger at any age, have more energy, and live a life with vitality. Put the power of MyoHealth to work for you.
I started working out consistently for the first time in years, and I've lost 50 pounds. I've been lifting weights, I've been swimming, and then the muscle mass, that's what really surprises me. I can't believe at my age, I'll be 73 this fall, my life has changed. I'm not the same anymore. MyoHealth changed my life, definitely, and I just thank God for it.
I would definitely recommend MyoHealth.
I'm sold on MyoHealth.
MyoHealth tastes great, and it helps me in the gym.
I feel like I've got my strength back.
My upper arms are tighter.
I have a great deal more energy.
I encourage anybody to try MyoHealth.
It really works.
Call 1-800-771-5584 or online at trivita.com to place your order for products to support your wellness goals. As a Trivita introductory offer, use promo code BROWN25 and receive a 25% discount on the products of your choice. Call 1-800-771-5584. 800-771-5584.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, blessed and delighted to be with you again. Make sure you're getting our frontline equipping newsletter. Go to thelineoffire.org and click subscribe. It'll be coming your way. We'll send you last month's immediately and then get you in our welcome tour as well. That's thelineoffire.org. If you're watching on YouTube and you're not a subscriber, make sure you click subscribe and then the bell so you'll be notified when we go live with new shows. So last week, I talked about the bill passed by the House. We still have to go to the full Senate, but passed by the House for a bill outlawing certain anti-Semitic speech, etc. And I just focused on the mistaken notion that the definition of the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance would forbid someone from saying that in the New Testament times that Jewish leaders gave Jesus over to be crucified. It would say it is anti-Semitic if you say all Jews of all time are responsible or Israel today is responsible for the death of Jesus. That would be anti-Semitic. So I just explained it. Whether the bill was a good bill or not, another question. Whether it restricted freedom of speech or not, another question. I simply dealt with that reality and almost saying Jewish people need Jesus to be saved like everybody else. So some of the responses to that, here's one guy. Strange how Talmudic Zionists can actually control the pedos, Jesuits, and Satanists in Congress. And this is the sicko stuff that's out there. As they explain in their wicked beliefs, we, the lower-level people, Goyim, are to serve Zionists. So this is the crazy stuff that people believe. Someone was pointing out to Tucker Carlson a friendly reminder of that New Testament authors were Jewish. The same guy I just quoted a moment ago says, ah, no, Hebrew Zionists are not Jews. They're wicked, satanic, Talmudic devils. This is the sick stuff that's out there. When I just set the record straight about what the bill actually says or what the IHRA definition actually is, it's been a definition around for some years and widely used in Jewish circles to define anti-Semitism. And saying Jews need Jesus like everybody else, here's some of the responses we get. Dr. Brown showing his loyalty to Israel over Christ. And then, so if it's illegal to say that the Jews killed Jesus, then it should be illegal to say that Germans killed Jews? Unreal. And notice the Jews, but just Germans. Extraordinary. This is the mindset, the rhetoric, and friends, which you have to realize, this is not just fringe. These crazy Jew-hating attitudes are becoming more and more mainstream, and you'll see more and more of them within the church. Mark my words. With that, we'll go back to the phones over in Texas. George, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Great. Thank you for holding. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Well, thank you, Dr. Brown, for having me. I want to talk a little bit, it's in reference to this doctrine about the pre-trib, which I believe is a little anti-Semite as well. But, when we read in Revelation 20, where it talks about, blessed and holy is he who has part in the first resurrection, second death has no part over them. But this doctrine, this teaching, says that when the Lord comes at that the rapture, he will come for the church, but not knowing that the church, as it started with Jews, and it's comprised of Jews and Gentiles, and also when Paul writes in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 15, where out of the two people, he made one. So we should not be separating what God has united, just like in a marriage, right? Do not separate what God, do not put asunder what God has
united. Right. So let me ask this united. One. Let me ask this one question to clarify, and then we'll open this up together. So
yes.
A Jewish person outside of Jesus is not part of the ecclesia, not part of the church. Would you agree with that? In other words, the church is saved Jews and saved Gentiles. So I'm a saved Jew, you're a saved Gentile. We're part of the same spiritual family. We're one in the Messiah. But Gentiles who don't believe in Jesus and Jews who don't believe in Jesus are not part of the ecclesia. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. So that's not anti-Semitic to say that. You're saying that because dispensationalism, the pre-trib teaching, makes them two complete separate entities, the church and then Israel, that's what makes it anti-Semitic? I just want to make sure I understand.
No. Where I was leading with that is, for example, they say, in other words, Jews are not going in the, as they say, the rapture, but they will have to go through the great tribulation. In other words, you're going to have to suffer. If you want to go to heaven, this is what, you know, you're going to go through.
Got
I believe that the Lord will come at the end,
as
it's written, you know, throughout Scripture, in Matthew 24, you know, at the end, where...
Yeah, after the tribulation
after the
of those
tribulation,
days. Yep.
Yes, and when, you know, Lazarus dies, that Martha, you know, Jesus says, yeah, he will rise again. She says, yeah, I know that in the last day he will rise.
Yes, yeah, so George, I'm with you on that, that I understand that the second coming is one event at the end of the age. There's not a second coming and a third coming. So at the after the tribulation of those days, that he will appear for the entire world to see, and that we will look to him.
Every
and we'll be caught up together with him and descend to the earth. So here's the interesting thing about dispensationalism, the pre-trib rapture idea. On the one hand, it's been strongly pro-Israel for decades, that these authors were expecting the Jewish people to come back to the land long before it happened. They were talking about it. They were believing for it. They were praying for it. And they would be on the front lines of those recognizing modern Israel today as fulfillment of prophecy, which is, you know, or ongoing fulfillment of prophecy, which is wonderful and scriptural. They would be on the front lines standing with Israel today and standing for Israel's right to defend itself, which is all good and positive. And they would be believing that America should have its capital in Jerusalem and that we should recognize Jerusalem as the capital. All those are good, positive things that would be philo-Semitic, right? Pro-Jewish, pro-Israel. The negative is what you're saying, which is that the scenario is when all hell breaks loose on earth, that the church is taken out, but Israel remains, and that while we all feast in heaven, the Jews are getting slaughtered on the earth with something maybe even worse than a Holocaust, and we're praying for the return of the Jewish people back to the land, what, to be slaughtered? So that's why on the one hand, pre-tribbers, dispensationalists, historically they've been pro-Israel, standing with Israel, you know, supporters of the nation, etc. But the problem is that the end time scenario is one where when it gets really bad, that the church is out of here because God couldn't let his beloved church suffer like that. But the Jews suffer and then have to go through tribulation and maybe some horrific suffering in order to be saved, as opposed to simply being saved by faith. So, yeah, there are some real problems with it. And again, sir, the average pre-trib person you meet is going to be pro-Israel, believing that God's restored the Jewish people back to the land. But there are some aspects of it that really are very unpleasant.
Yes.
To the Jewish people, and that raised concern. So I appreciate the call. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Have a blessed one.
You too. Now, look, friends, the way you evaluate a doctrine is just what does Scripture say, right? And we recognize that just as the disciples didn't understand messianic prophecy about Jesus until after he died and rose, so those events had to happen, then they open their eyes. We don't want to be so arrogant to think that we alone have the full revelation of the end, or that we have every detail in place, or that only we have the right eschatology and everybody else is in such error that they're not even saved or they're deeply deceived. We don't want to fall into that mentality. But I just want to throw this out to you. All right? I want to throw something out to you. Let's say you're Calvinist, Reform, you believe in the sovereignty of God, or just in general, you believe in the sovereignty of God, so that if there's a world war, ultimately God caused it or willed it. So if there is the rebirth of the modern state of Israel after 2,000 years, and in terms of full sovereignty, well over 2,000 years. There's the rebirth of Israel out of the ashes of the Holocaust. Who did it? Who did it? How did it happen? Who was behind it? Was it just people? Was it the devil? Does anyone have the power to undo God's edict? Because God scattered our people, my people, in judgment. We don't have the power to regather ourselves. UN can't regather us. Satan can't do it. Only God could do it. So here the Bible talks about God preserving us and bringing us back into the land despite our sin in numerous prophetic passages. He brings us back. So here we are back in the land. The Bible talks about Jesus coming back to Jerusalem and Jerusalem being a city of controversy for the whole world. And here we see the world controversy around Jerusalem. We see a growing number of Jewish believers in the land, now several tens of thousands. We see the rising religious opposition. It's just like New Testament times unfolding again in so many ways. Is it so striking to believe that, hey, the Bible says it's really coming to pass? I'm not a dispensationalist, I'm not pre-trib, but I do believe that God keeps his word. I do believe when he speaks plainly, we should take him plainly. And therefore, as I see these things unfold, I clearly see the hand of God. May God intervene. May he bring his Jewish people, may he bring the Muslim people to himself there, and may his mercy be poured out on all those suffering in the Middle East right now. Back with you tomorrow.